Hello and welcome to the Adubrana podcast. I'm Aditya. We know we are returning after a long break. Some of us were busy, some of us were like moving cities and things like that. But from here on, we hope to be more regular. Diving right into today's episode, it's a very special film with two special guests. Today we are talking about Sapta Sagarache Hello Side A that released on September 1st and on Amazon Prime a week ago. It's a beautiful, poetic, heartbreaking, romantic film written by Hemant Rao and Gundu Shetty and directed by Hemant Rao. Side A stars Rakshit Shetty, Rukmini Vasant, Achyut Kumar, Pavitra Lokesh, among others. And it's the first of a two-part film. Side B is slated to release on October 27th. If you remember, Hemant Rao joined us on the podcast to talk about his previous directorial Kavaludhari. We got him to return to the podcast for this one. Hi, Hemant. How are you? And thanks for joining.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And congratulations on a beautifully made film.
Thank you.
And we also have another pod regular joining us today. We have journalist Shubha Rao. Hi, Shubha. Welcome back. Let's go straight ahead into the film. So, Hemant, you've spoken extensively about the real accident from where the idea kind of germinated. So basically for the audience, an accident like you see in the film. So, okay, this is going to be full of spoilers. So please listen to this after watching the film, it's on Prime. So basically an accident like you see in the film, hit and run, and the real perpetrator getting away is something that Hemant witnessed. But what I wanted to ask you was, an idea like this could have gone in several different directions. Like it could be a straight up revenge saga. It could be a courtroom drama. It could be, which we've had before. It could be a thriller. If you remember, when exactly did the idea of turning this into a tragic romance feel more compelling to you, and you decided to take the script in that direction?
That actually happened quite early on, in the sense that once I started writing about the film, once I started examining the repercussions of taking on a decision like that, it quickly, quickly made sense that, you know, it's going to go downhill from here. And I wanted, it just made sense to sort of make, you know, when you lose something precious, which is your life outside, you know, and a certain identity that you lose as a consequence of your action, then what you lose, if it is something that is worthless, then there's no value to it. You know, it almost feels like you're going from one horrible state to a slightly better off state. So I wanted to create a scenario where, you know, it is a kind of a good thing that is going on, and this decision sort of creates that, you know, big sort of crack in their lives. So it just naturally, organically sort of became a love story. Because for me, when I started writing the characters, trying to figure out who these characters were, his relationship mm-hmm. with this girl was something that came very instinctively to me. So I just went with the flow.
So when it came instinctively to you, do you mean so we do see the relationship being fully formed in the film. So did you think about it right from that angle, or did you also see them in a very like you had their own origin story, so to speak?
At a very later point, when we were shooting the film and I started dabbling the idea of making this into two parts, I had an origin story which I had used in the workshops with the actors, a sort of a origin story, but I sort of fleshed it out and wrote like 5-6 scenes, but decided against shooting it because I felt it is working, you know, for me without it having an origin story. There's a certain believability to their story. So I didn't want to sort of, you know, justify the origin story. So I canned the idea of shooting the origin story. But when I first wrote the film, see, the thing is, the nature of the film is that the accident is what sort of is the big point which changes the lives of these two people, right?
Yeah. So yeah.
The accident happens at a very, at an odd time. You don't plan for an accident. That's why it's called an accident. So I didn't want it to have a sort of a beginning, you know, to their story, because I wanted their story to be at a certain certain space, you know, both mentally and physically, for it to, you know, for this accident to sort of create that impact on them. So that was one of the main reasons why it just felt organically right for me to start the story midway with regard to Manu and Priya.
Right. Okay. Shubha, can you talk about you? I couldn't watch it in the theater. You watched it in the theater. Can you talk about your experience watching the film?
I couldn't get up when the end credits rolled. I had to sit there for quite a bit. I was the last one to leave the theater, I guess, because I was just feeling so choked. And I'm an easy crier, but you know, the film, I think it just shook everyone. You could see a lot of people pulling out their kerchiefs, and it was nice that, you know, everyone almost reacted the same way to certain things in the film. And there was a certain, I think the film tapped into a certain vulnerability of us as an audience also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because the characters were vulnerable, and I think it was very easy for the audience to relate to those characters. And I think somewhere the rawness of it all brought forth people's vulnerability to the fore, and you were willing to be, you know, you're willing to allow the film to wash over you, literally.
Yeah.
That's what I felt in the theater. Yes. It was just,
yeah,
it's a film it is a very hard watch, but it's a very essential watch.
Yeah, and in no time you become really, really close to these characters.
Very close, and you can't sleep. Hemant was just, many people losing their sleep. Like someone wrote yesterday on Twitter, I remember, that, you know, ma'am, it's been 3 weeks and I'm yet to, you know, get the characters out of my mind. So
yeah. I mean, in addition to like what a film can do to you, it's also, I guess, great that you have a second part coming, so people actually have something to,
we can keep creating our own stories, like I've told Hemant, you know, and see what he has come up with finally.
Hemant,
huge pressure that.
Well, you finished it, right? I'm guessing you finished it.
No, both parts are shot, and both things are kind of ready. Only post work of the music work and the sound work is going on for side B. But it's a very odd situation for me, because, you know, it's you are sort of you're serving a dish and then telling them, you know, you have to wait for the next course, and also giving them ingredients enough for them to make their own dish also. So,
And in such close quarters, you know, I don't think this has happened before, that you've had such time between two parts.
Yeah, there was a certain reasoning behind dividing the film into two parts. One of the main reasons for me is that, you know, when Manu's character goes into prison, and he's see, it's a very common thing amidst all our lives, where, and it happens at various strata of society. It is not just the privileged class, or, you know, the non-privileged class that go through this, but relationships don't work out. It's very common, right? And it's not all relationships work out. Only a few lucky ones work out. So this thing of it not working out, there are several reasons why it doesn't work out. Sometimes, you know, time and space, when I mean space, I don't mean physical space or, you know, mental space, just the physical space, right? I mean, just the space in terms of two people being at two different points of time in their life is a very interesting idea for me. So for me, Manu being stuck in a box for all these years and then coming out, and then sort of this love story, where does he go from there, is for me a very exciting aspect of the film. So, you know, I'm quite kicked about side B in that sense.
And it's also not just about that close quarters Shubha mentioned, that we are getting a movie immediately. It's also that this is not a genre where you get this kind of a two-part film, and you have this kind of an epic storytelling. Of course, you have, you know, like romantic epics, but this sort of putting it in cinema, I think it's very rare to have this guy for a love story.
No, I think that's only possible because I have a producer like Rakshit who is equally mad. So I get to try out these crazy ideas, and he gets it. I mean, he gets the reasoning behind it. So yeah, I mean, I'm glad I'm getting it to do it. Like you said, rightfully, it's very difficult to try something like this in this genre specifically. But I mean, why not? I mean, why not? You know, it's
yeah. Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's how I looked at it. And the reason for 7 weeks is because I wanted people to, you know, the impact of Manu listening to the tape and, you know, him being a certain way. When the side B releases, it's like you understand why they've been apart for so long, right? Why there is this gap between them. So it just felt right, kind of right for the audience to be part of that separation as well.
And you mentioned about how, you know, like accident is, of course, something that you don't expect. It's something just happens out of the blue. And you also mentioned about the origin story that you had in your head that you didn't want to, ultimately you didn't want to shoot. So can you talk a little bit about the opening scene? And how did that look in the script? Like it conveys, it's so succinct, it's so controlled, it's so well done. It conveys everything we need to know about the couple. It conveys the dynamic. It foreshadows several things. And in the actually the film is actually full of foreshadowing. It also has us guessing because we don't realize he's a mere driver until later in the scene, or maybe we don't realize until after the next scene. Can you talk about that? Like how you arrived at that opening scene, and what was your brief to the actors?
With regard to brief to the actors as such, we had extensively worked on a workshop with the actors, with Rakshit and Rukmini. So I'd spent a lot of time. We had spent a lot of time sort of prepping, not scenes. None of the scenes were rehearsed, but we constantly did a lot of character work in terms of understanding, you know, where does Priya come from? What are her fears? What kind of a person is she? And you know, what is her background? And I had a bunch of things that I had sort of written about Priya with regard to, you know, why Manu is everything to her. In terms of, there was this document that I had written and shared with Rukmini very early on about who I think Priya is and how there is a certain, you know, the way she would have lost her father and is very similar to the way she loses Manu also. So there's a certain that kind of experience molds you to be a certain kind of a person. So, you know, so that kind of character of graph is what I had sort of provided her, and she did a lot of homework basis that. And with Rakshit individually, there was just a sense of, you know, who this character is, what is he, what are his wants and desires, and the origin story in terms of the couple's history, like the shared memory of what the couple does, who responds to, you know, who responds how in an argument, and who, you know, who says sorry first. So I'd sort of worked on this very large memory bank for the two actors, for them to sort of feel like Manu and Priya are two real people who have this thing that is going on. And so, you know, that's how we sort of did the workshop. So all the scenes as such, there was no approach to the scene. We just went with the flow of the scene. Now, coming to the opening scene, it was not written with a lot of, you know, planned precision that I'm going to foreshadow the film or, you know, I'm going to give as much information as possible about the characters or, you know, I've always believed that, you know, you can tell a lot about a couple with the way they fight. Because there is a certain tell to that relationship in terms of how much they love each other. Only people, you know, in a relationship which has a lot of love fight a different way to a couple that is very bitter with each other. So for me, starting the relationship with a fight felt right. That is one thing that I started off with. That I wanted to start out the film showing that, you know, here is a couple you see them fight and you can tell just by the way they fight that they love each other, right? So that is how, that was my approach to writing that scene. And then as I wrote the scene, it's just new things added, got added to it, and it sort of ended up foreshadowing the whole, you know, the whole journey and giving away the character traits and things like the driver element being revealed. That and all, I wanted to sort of, you know, it's just a learned skill over time, where how you give information to the audience is what good screenplay is, right? As in, that's how the masters have done it really well. And, you know, I've tried to incorporate everything that I have been awed by when I watch films and when I study cinema. So you know, those elements I sort of that just came into the flow when I was writing.
Right. I wanted to just step in here to ask, at no point in the film, you know, does it look like the audience is treated as anything less than intelligent? And you did not feed them with too many things. You know, you just allowed them to make the connections. And I think that is one of the reasons why people responded to the film they did, because the film, they saw the film, yes, but the film also took a little shape in their heads also and hearts. So this ability to treat the audience with the dignity that they deserve instead of spoon feeding everything, that is a chance to take in a film like this. But what gave you the courage to go ahead and do that?
I've always believed that I am at par to the audience or even below the audience. I don't believe in this whole way of thinking that the audience is dumb. Or talking to them. And see, making films is a huge superpower to have, in the sense that you have the ability to reach, you know, and influence so many people. But it's also something that shouldn't be taken too seriously, where you feel like you are the, you know, the person to sort of teach them how to live or show them what love is. I had no intention of, I really was dreading the idea of, you know, I constantly check the script and the, you know, performances or anywhere, you know, during the shooting process while we are doing the scene, to ensure that it is not coming across like I am trying to show what love is, because that was never the intention. Because I started off with the thinking that love is existent in all shapes and forms in everybody's life. It is the most common entity to human beings. So everybody knows about this. So let me not try and waste time trying to explain to them what it is. And I feel it's a good thing where you meet halfway on the bridge, where you don't explain everything. I demand attention. I want to be a filmmaker who is also asking the audience for that, you know, for that extra breadcrumb for them to sort of figure out, okay, this is the clue. This is the reason why this is a certain way. So it's always a nice thing when you take that into account, right? Otherwise, you have the fear of, you know, just listening, and nobody likes just listening. So it's always nice when the conversation is two-way. So I wanted the audience to also have enough room for understanding the film and interpreting the film in a certain way.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. Lovely.
So apart from the, of course, there is the romance at the center, but this film also has a strong focus on the class disparity, and there's a class war that is always afoot. And of course, Manu works for the boss. Manu works for, and there is also his the character played by Achyut Kumar, and there is who has his own ropes to climb within that hierarchy, and none of this comes across as a caricature. Was that in any way challenging or difficult? Because a character like Shankar Gowda is definitely evil and terrible, but you can also tell that he comes across like a man of his word. A lot of films with characters like these have them talking a certain way. There is a spring in the step. There's an arrogance to the whole thing. But the actors here don't play it up like that at all. Is that something that you wanted to carefully avoid? Is that something that you took care especially?
Yeah, absolutely. As in, because it's you see these characters being very either too devious or too cool for their own good. So I was very scared of that, and I think a lot of credit has to go to Mr. Avinash sir for the, you know, for the way he played the character. There's a certain elegance and a certain grace, but still there's a certain, you know, shift in tone with the way he speaks, which only a terrific actor like Avinash sir can, you know, can do. So those, you know, it's always, it's a great thing when you are not, I mean, the cushion that I provided myself from a writing perspective, like me and Gundu when we were writing, the cushion that we provided ourselves is not being too definitive in terms of, okay, this character is this. We sort of gave that space for Avinash sir to, you know, play it a certain way. Similarly for Achutana also to, you know, play the character a certain way without it being too rigid, you know, in terms of how, otherwise it that risk of, like you said, it becoming caricaturish was there, and it was a very big fear. So I'm glad it's not coming across this way. I mean, coming across that way. So
yeah, especially when it came to you know, the character played by Avinash, that could have swung either way. You know, you're so used to the rich person being the heartless person trope that this was very beautiful, but eventually, you know, the help that is promised does not come because of the same person, but due to some other circumstance. But it was very beautiful that you put in a little bit of humanness into his character. He actually feels when Manu gets into trouble in jail, and, you know, he wants to help.
Yeah.
Which is, I thought, a very interesting thing to say about this person, you know, that he says, I know the distance it took for me to come from the gate to this place. You know, he just knows. He's been where Manu once was.
Yeah.
So that was very beautifully done, I thought.
No, I mean, that line, like when I read, Gundu wrote that sequence, when he, Gundu wrote that line. And then I read that line, I was just blown away because it says so much in just one line, you know. It's a very beautiful way of explaining something very complex in the simplest of ways. So I was blown away by what Gundu wrote. So I'm glad it's being appreciated. Very happy for Gundu also, because I've been working with Gundu for a very long time. In the sense, he's joined my direction team as an assistant director in Godivanna. And he was like fresh out of college and very new to the business. And he didn't know much about films and how films are made. General appetite for cinema and interest towards cinema. And he's worked on Kavaladari as additional dialogue writer. And now he worked on this as a writer. So to see his journey is very interesting. And see how much value he has added to the film is for me a very enjoyable process, because it's important when you make films that you grow as people, and to grow with other people is also a very nice experience.
True. But this is not something that, you know, you see too often, where I think in almost all the interviews, everyone speaks about the other person. It is like, you know, it's not a team just in letter, but it's really a team in spirit. And it looks like you'll have a great time putting together this film.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's something that all of us, every single one of us, cherish. You know, it'll always look back. We've made this film. Like the way I look at it, the way Advait looks at it, the way Charan looks at it, you know, Rakshit looks at it, Rukmini, Gundu, all of us, the whole team. There are many people I'm leaving out here, but there is a certain you know. Like when you look back at this, we want to leave the best version of ourselves somewhere in history, somewhere in time. And to do that within the framework of a story, within the framework of cinema, is a privilege that not many people can afford. So to have that privilege is itself an amazing thing. And I'm glad that all of us feel that way. So it's truly special. It's really special, you know, to be amidst so many beautiful people.
Yeah, in terms of making this, you know, it's definitely a sweeping epic story for me, at least. And to achieve something like that, you of course need like all these characters that are fully developed, and they travel like across for a long time. And how much care and how much work did you have to put in to like develop each and every character? Because I think every little person gets an arc. Like even if they are not an important player, their actions sometimes inform how other people around them behave. Like there is a throwaway mention and the shot of the older driver or the older gentleman who works for Shankar Gowda and who's ready to take the fall, and you just have a shot of him and you don't need it, but you still have that character there anyway, and then you keep showing the young prisoner who is crying all the time, and he gets his own arc, and we understand the prison better through him, and he doesn't even have actual lines. And there is of course the old woman in the bus to whom Priya becomes indifferent by the end. So a scene has multiple things going on. We seemingly look only at Manu and Priya, but in many scenes there are these little things going on. There's of course there's a scene in the stable that I really liked, where we see both Prabhu's predicament and his how much he hates the job, and also about Manu wondering about the seaside home that he wants to get Priya. So I had two questions about this. These are pretty important things to develop character, and did they come naturally, or because there are several players and you had to focus on each one of them? And the other question that I want to ask is this change in both central characters, their slow loss of that romanticism and innocence that gives way to the cynicism because what they have gone through in all these years.
I didn't get the second part of the question with regard to the cynicism. Could you just repeat that?
I'll ask that separately. Actually, that's kind of
why. Okay.
You just go ahead with the first one. Yeah.
Yeah. So with regard to each characters, I hate it when when you're watching a film and then every character's individual motive is the advancement of the hero story. After a certain time becomes very lazy, and it puts me off in certain kind of films. And I feel it feels very criminal when you have fantastic actors and you don't use them, right? From a writing perspective. So
yeah.
When I'm writing, it's not like I'm deciding. It's not like me and Gundu are like sitting and like, okay, this character, his arc should be this or it should be that. But individually, what we become very clear is, there has to be, if there is somebody occupying the frame, then there must be a very good reason for that person to be inside that frame. Now, once that reason is figured out, then the scene writing becomes easy because the character is serving a purpose within the framework of the scene. So that is the tentpole around which scene construction happens. So, there are no characters who are just standing there without any purpose. So if a scene can work without a character being there, then that means that the character doesn't have any purpose in that scene and he can be out of the scene. So a lot of characters were sort of written in with this in mind, and they had very specific roles, like, conflicting roles with regard to how Achyutana is trying to advance the ladder and how Manu is trying to sort of, advance his own ladder in a way. So it was sort of planned, that way, where every time a character comes across, there has to be some interaction that sort of either advances the plot or the character story in terms of, strengthening the character. In fact, in that stable scene, the way I had thought about it, like choreographed it in my head, which I did like a very, like a urgent version of it in the film, what you see it, is basically I wanted to create like a domino effect between what Achyutana's character does and how Manu reacts to it. It's there now, but it's so subtle that probably people have not observed it. The idea was that, when Achyutana in his frustration kicks the door, something falls, and which causes another thing to fall, and then, Manu is sitting in front of the car and something just falls where he is standing. So I wanted to create that domino effect, but right now it is,
Okay.
it kicks the door and the water falls and the sound alerts Manu. So his frustration is what, you know, sort of directs Manu to look at him. That
Yeah,
is
it
how it
yanks
is
him out
now.
of that dream. Yeah.
He's reading a newspaper and he sort
Yeah,
of
yeah.
comes out. Yeah, so that is how it is now. But initially the idea was to create like a, you know, like how the you have these dominoes tiles where you click one block and it makes another block fall, and you know, but it was just too painful to create firstly for the art department, and it's impractical for it
But
for something like that to play out you know, in the middle of a scene. So we removed it.
I think you kind of played a long game with it. Like you did create a domino in a way, you know, how till up to that point you have this secretary getting yelled at in every scene, and you know how badly he's treated. And but those are all Manu scenes, but you just see this guy in the background getting yelled at, and then you slowly come to this guy.
That was intended. I wanted it. I wanted that sort of to be in the background. I wanted. Usually, that's how it is, right? When you know, when
Yeah.
you end up becoming a pawn in somebody else's board, you don't know their scheme. You don't even know. You'll actually be an innocent bystander. So, I wanted that to sort of. I for the audience to sort of watch that experience, because that for me was an interesting angle to explore as a writer.
There is another visual aspect that I wanted to quiz you on. There are several shots of these. Of course, there's the beach and the seaside, which is kind of a metaphor and a motif throughout. But there are several shots of these gutters and droplets, and even it's there in the stable, it's there in the prison. It's of course stands as a polar opposite of what the two what the couple dreamt their lives to be. Can you talk about how you arrived at that, or what exactly made you have several shots of that?
It was not like a very intentional thing, but I wanted to show you know the I mean the gutter shot with the car becoming the butterfly in the stable. That was just for kicks, because I thought it'll be a cool transition. Also because it is getting into that slightly eerie. Something is not right space, you
Yeah.
know, and it's like a visual. Sometimes when you see a visual and it just invokes a certain emotion, which is slightly off of center. So it this was that, you know, using the visual like that to sort of create that very subconscious effect in the audience. But it was not like a planned thing to show the class divide in terms of where he's at and where she's at. That was a very conscious thing in terms of, you know, showing the two different lives that he is
Yeah.
living. That is something that I wanted to sort of reiterate. And within the framework of the jail, I wanted to show you know, the things like human basic human needs, like going use of toilets, and you know, these are all things that we take for granted on the outside, but people on the inside, they in my experience of talking to prisoners and doing the jail rounds, everything is regulated and everything is monetized. So for me, that kind of basic survival being that, you know, questionable of being questionable standards was something that I felt I should show, because that is not something that we on the outside know about.
Yeah.
Right. So since we're talking about the scenes inside the prison, one thing that really struck me was about how prison is not really reformation for some. It is just a means to get more criminal, and how for one set of people, it is an attempt to accept what you've done and try and become better and get on with life. Basically, one person teaches you to become a better criminal, and the other teaches you how to become a better person, and talks about how, while you might be forgiven, there are some things that will stay with you till your last breath on earth. And I wanted to find out about how you managed to find that little kernel of humanity, of humaneness inside that dark space where fights and deaths and everything else is common. Have you managed to, put in place this really wonderful oasis of humaneness inside that sequence? that
I think
area.
it was not. It was not a very. It was not something that you know was like a discovery. I genuinely believe that, you know, in the most difficult circumstances, faced against the toughest of ordeals, if you know, examining history of man, there's always hope. There's always, that is what is very uniquely distinctive about us as people. You know, as a species, there is some way we find a way to be good in the most horrible of circumstances. So I kind of knew that from a very worldview that I hold. But when I went to the prison and actually walked around, it was like a reinforcement of that. Because, you know, I still remember when I entered the central jail in Bangalore, I went on a tour, and there was a guy who I was introduced to, who was a convict, who was incarcerated for a half murder, for a rowdy, he was a rowdy cheater. So he was serving time, and he was also in charge of the radio in the jail. It was a new program that the jail has come up with, where there's a radio every day, and there's an RJ, and this guy is the RJ. So he interviewed me inside prison, and he played Nai Sanjage from Godivanna, and I went around the halls and corridors while, you know, the speakers are blaring Nai Sanjage loudly. It was very surreal. And I met a lot of people, and I met a gentleman who was Patil's sort of character was sort of based off him. His wife died in a dowry incident. You know, she was you know, with a fire related thing, and he did two graduations while he was inside prison. And I met a music teacher who was teaching kids, like not kids, juveniles, 19-year-old, 20-year-olds, how to sing. And they sang for us. They sang for me and the jailer. And I found out that the teacher is a triple murder convict. So for me, it was like a very, you know, it was very confusing. But at the same time, it just made me look at these people as people, some of whom have had a very strong criminal background, some of whom who are still very criminally inclined, and some of whom who have just made mistakes. You know, circumstances have forced them, or, you know, they have made bad decisions. It's like a very interesting, you know, environment to sort of observe. And I feel it's an environment that really has not been well represented in films, because jails usually are great backdrops for action sequences and heroism and stuff like that, which is fabulous in its own way. But I felt this is, I was like, wow, this, there's so much beauty here, so much to show and tell, you know, about this place. So that for me is where I drew all this, you know, all these scenes from, and all these, so the sort of the humanity that exists within prison, and how at the same time you also have this very, you know, I interviewed a lot of career criminals who just, you know, who regularly go hit somebody for money, then go to prison for a few days, and then come out and then again do something like that. So I interviewed like a spectrum of characters, and it was very interesting that, you know, there was a spectrum to begin with. So, and that is what I wanted to sort of explore.
And talking of the prison itself, I also wanted to ask you about the kind of spaces that you wanted, like the production design, and in terms of where you wanted to shoot certain scenes, like the crowded subway where Manu tells Priya and they part. It's like they could just be anyone, and this could be happening to anyone in a bustling city, and they could be just next to us. And the houses they visit, and how you juxtapose it with the high-rise new gated community they see just for kicks. You even have a shot of her pressing the ground floor, like they were building castles in the air, but now they can return to the ground. Can you talk about what kind of spaces that you wanted to film these scenes in? Like, what exactly was the brief? Is something you had in the script, or is something that slowly got developed?
In the sense that, see, for me, locations are something that I'm very particular about, because I feel the moment you place the camera, the location should, you know, immediately set the mood and provide a avenue to tell the story, you know, to tell the story visually. So for me, things like the subway the design for the scene there was that I wanted to start the scene with her listening to music and how Manu sort of snatches music away from her. And, you know, I wanted, as a consequence of her looking outside at something very pretty and beautiful and sort of admiring how beautiful the flowers are and having a good time, and the music being ripped apart, I immediately wanted to, you know, stage the next scene in a very chaotic environment. So my option was to do it in the middle of a traffic, you know, like when there is band traffic, the people are blaring horns and stuff like that. Or I wanted to do it in another place that is, you know, equally noisy. So,
right.
And this is where sometimes, you know, you just want to do something that you have not done before. So in Kavaludari, I had done a scene with a traffic jam, which is really noisy. And, you know, the scene where Anand sir is in the ambulance and he's not able to clear it out. So I didn't want to repeat myself by doing another scene in a traffic jam. So I chose this because it just felt, you know, it is equally chaotic, because early mornings when you travel to Majestic, when you sort of walk around that portion of the city, there is a certain mad rush that people have to get somewhere. You know, they don't really care. They don't have time to stop. So for me, the idea immediately became fascinating to stage the scene there, and we had to recreate it. So that entire subway, whatever you see is recreated in an empty space that we sort of took from the government, from the KSRTC. They cordoned off an area and gave it to us. And my production designer Ullas did a fabulous job in terms of recreating that environment. We got the right kind of junior artists and, you know, populated it. And so similarly, with regard to the city as well, I wanted something which is at a very high rise, because I wanted, like, in a very simple way, they're dreaming of something that is so way beyond them that the transition shot from, you know, from them coming back to ground, coming back to earth, was like pressing the ground button. Like, I wanted that emotional transition as well.
Yeah.
So I like to plan my transitions in some shape or form. Either it has to be a visual transition or it has to be a story transition. You know, otherwise, it just ends up becoming, in the day of Instagram and TikTok, where transitions are being automated, you just take two videos and give it to the software, and software will give you a transition back. It's not really a big deal to do a transition. Anybody can do it, right? But to do it with a certain story nuance is something that no software, TikTok or Instagram, can't do it. So that is where, you know, the filmmaking aspect of it will always, you know, sort of hold importance. So I like to do those things. That's like a pet peeve that I have. So that's how I worked on those scenes in terms of the locations playing an impact. For me, it is 80% of the job if the location is correct, because your staging sort of is dictated by the location that you have.
Right. Just asking, does this also come from having a very intimate knowledge of the city you're shooting in? Bangalore is home. You've been around, I'm sure. And does this come? I'm talking of all three of your films. They show us sights and scenes of Bangalore that other films shot in today's time do not. And they probably remind me of, you know, say films shot in the 80s or the 90s, where life did not necessarily revolve around high rises and IT parks, where people walked on the road, where people took autos, where people rode bikes. It seems like a throwback to a gentler, tender era.
I don't know. It's not a conscious thing, but I love my city. I love location recce, because even when I'm not shooting a film, I do location recce sometimes, in the sense that if I'm driving somewhere and nowhere in particular to go to, and I'm just driving home from some work, and I'm, you know, I have time, I see a road and it looks new and I don't know where it goes, I end up taking it just because I want to know what is there on that road. So I had this habit of going for long walks. So I never maintain a certain route. I always take a new route because I'm like, okay, where does this road go? Where does this road go? And, you know, there is a certain character to the city, like which I love, you know, usually the common feeling is that, you know, nativity is only village centric films. When people say it's very rooted, you immediately think, you know, it's with, it has to be an agricultural background or some village sort of a thing. There is nativity in the city also, which is very difficult to capture. And I feel I feel very happy when somebody says, you know, we saw Bangalore in your film. I'm like, it gives me cheap thrills when people say that.
No, completely. Because I think, like you said, it's very difficult to root a film in a city and, you know, show the city, because the normal tendency is to think that anything rooted has to be, you know, in the hinterland. It cannot be in a metro city.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought you did that pretty well in all your films. So
and shooting it is very difficult. That is the biggest challenge, because completely. The moment you come and shoot outside in public, it's like it's the recreation of the reality is painstaking. Somebody or the other will look at the camera, somebody or the other will be smiling, and to control that is extremely painful.
And like you said, you talked about transitions in Instagram, and I think we also, with all that the apps and everything, we see city with, you know, in through all these filters, and we see them very differently, and the cities don't look cinematic anymore in movies, and sometimes very rarely movies come where you see a city in a very that kind of a charming look, that I think we kind of lost it.
No, I'm happy that it's coming across, because like even Advait, right, he's also somebody who is equally excited about you know, doing location wiki. So it's nice that we gel on that, in that sense, because both of us are very keen in terms of making sure that it doesn't look like a reel. You know, the film should never look like a reel.
Yeah.
It's not an insult to Instagram.
Of course, yeah.
You know, it's a different medium, and you know, it's something that, you know, it's like a wasted opportunity if you're going to use cinema to, you know, to do that.
You spoke about snatching away music from Priya in that as an idea. The first time they meet in the visitors room in the prison, I think you completely took away the score and the soundscape of the prison. It's just a ticking clock, which at least for me represented like two things. It did made me think that, okay, music has probably disappeared from her life, and it is also like a countdown, calling time on their togetherness or unity. What's the thought process behind? What was your thought process behind going for that choice?
Sometimes what happens is when I'm writing, especially about real life and people that is very rooted in a certain reality, when I'm doing research, there are some portions of the story that are like a huge gaping hole, and I don't know how to fill it. So these holes sort of get filled while I'm doing research. So it's very interesting that you brought this up, because that particular scene, I knew that Manu and Priya have to meet, you know, for the first time in this visiting room. And I'd sort of written the scene of them meeting and them being separated. But what I hadn't factored is that when I decided to go to the prison to meet, it took me one hour 40 minutes drive. I drove in my car. It took me 1 hour 40 minutes to go from my house to the prison and actually get inside. The whole process took about 1 hour 40 minutes. And that's when I was like, oh man, if this girl has to come and meet this boy, it is a huge, you know, ordeal, especially if you don't have a vehicle of your own. You have to commute by bus.
It's a trek, yeah.
It's a trek. It's like half a day's job. And that is something that, you know, I felt is something that needs to be quantified in some way. So that's how the whole idea of her looking at the clock and jumping.
Yeah, I'm so glad you kept that whole thing, because it adds so much to the film.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to, you know, if I were to rip apart the film and make it like, you know, into a shorter film, then all of these details won't be there. But the reason why there are three modes of transportation: she walks, then she takes a bus, then she takes an auto, and all of this is taking a toll on her mentally, money, monetarily, And like there's physical exhaustion, right? Now to do this over and over and over again. So every time she's in the meeting room, I wanted that first meeting to sort of, you know, sort of just be like a given. Oh, she has to go through all of this to meet him once. So I felt it is important to sort of highlight the time aspect of it. And that's how the design for the clock thing came up. The design idea for using the ticking of the clock was with regard to how much of a time ordeal it is to meet somebody for, and you get to meet them for like literally like half a second or like 1 minute. You travel for 2 hours and you meet somebody for 2 minutes. It just feels very wrong just talking about it.
Yeah.
And when I spoke to the prison people at prison, the people who, you know, conduct the meeting rooms and stuff like that, they told me it's very common that, you know, people travel from cities. Somebody comes from, like, say, Bellary all the way to Bangalore to meet somebody for 2 minutes and 3 minutes because they don't have money to sit and, you know, pay the prison system to have their own time. And I was like blown away by that kind of commitment to another human being. So yeah, that whole thing came from there.
Yeah, and you know, having one of my former workplaces was right outside a prison, and every week during the meeting day, we'd see people going with little packets of snacks and coming from far away cities.
Yeah,
from within the same state, far away cities, from Mofussil towns, from villages. And, you know, coming in, going with so much of hope, sometimes they come back with the same packet again. God knows what happened there. So, you know, that really hit hard. And I think the way Gopalakrishna Deshpande's character speaks about, you look at the way she looks at you when she's leaving. She doesn't want to really stop seeing. I think that kind of also conveyed how, you know, her love just stays alive and vibrant and thrives in whatever situation you put her in. Her love just thrives. It refuses to die down. And I thought that is what was more heartbreaking than anything else. Yeah. So, you know, when you wrote this, Hemant, you knew what was going to happen to the two of them. And, you know, at what stage do you think that, you know, this grief is going to hit people hard? Yes, but they will still look forward to something nice happening. At what stage did you know that, you know, people know this is happening, but they still want something nice to happen to them?
No, I, as in, when I'm writing it, I'm feeling the emotions myself. So I don't feel happy when I'm giving, making life difficult for my characters, especially when I'm so attached to them. It takes a toll on me as well as a writer, because I feel those emotions right when I'm writing. So there have been many times when I felt very heavy after writing a scene, and I don't particularly enjoy the grief that is being handed out because I feel it is unfair. But the story needs to be written. So there are many times when I've written the story and just wondered maybe I can change the ending. So that sort of happens. You just get involved sometimes.
Right. Moving on, I thought we should talk a little about the technical aspect of the film also. While this film is extremely high in terms of the writing and the creativity and the performances and all of that, you have a solid technical crew to back you in the film. You know, be it the music or the cinematography, the edit, the sound. You know, how did it all come together? What kind of work went into putting this team together?
Putting the team together was not hard. They're super competent, extremely gifted, talented technicians. The amount of work that we have all put in together we have never, not for one day have I walked away thinking, hey, you know what, we'll just take some shot and just, you know, call it a day. So that has never happened. So, and the thing is, see, as the leader of the pack, as the person who is steering the ship in a way, the onus is always on the director to demand the highest of everybody around you and of yourself. So when when first day of shoot, trying to do something very exciting, technically difficult, or achieving a certain look, is easy, but to do it, 50 days later in a very grueling schedule when somebody's unwell and still at 3 o'clock in the morning or 2:30 at night, sorry, 2:30 in the morning, and still having that demand is difficult. So it's a very difficult work environment because we are challenging each other's regularly in the sense of trying to strive for the absolute best, because it comes from a place where we know that we will someday go away, but the films that we've made will always is what we are leaving behind. So that attitude towards work is something that is common to all of us in terms of how we approach our work. And technically speaking, a film like this, see, if it is written on paper, then filmmaking as a craft is so beautiful and unique in its amalgamation of different art forms coming together. It's very exciting and creatively stimulating to use various facets. Like sometimes, Rukmini's mentioned this in many interviews that, there are various stages where the cinematography takes center stage, and there are various stages where the music takes center stage. And it's like a giant, a giant piece of music where, you have a violin section, you have a winds, you have a percussion section, and it's like different people come, and like that's how a film gets made, right? So it's very nice to have that kind of an environment where all facets of cinema become very important for the overall experience that you're trying to achieve. So I'm just grateful to be working with such such bright minds, and so there's never a day where I can take a day off, because the expectations of people of me is at a certain level, and similarly vice versa. So that's a good environment where we push each other to try and give our best.
Right. Thank you, Adi.
And we talked about Advait, and we wanted to ask you about the very conscious blue motif for Priya, and also for the story in general. There is blue almost everywhere. Like even the prison visiting room has sort of a tinge of blue, and then you also managed to bring a blue tinge and shadow when she's taking the phone call from Manu in the dark. And I don't know if that's something that you consciously work on the lighting, or something that you do in post, but is that how conscious were you about that?
No. So Advait, the way he works is that, we have a discussion with each scene, with the treatment of each scene, and the blocking in terms of, how a scene is staged, and the blocking comes from me. But with regard to lighting the scene, it's completely his forte and his strength. And he sort of takes the time to understand. He's very good at getting the mood of the scene right. If the scene has a certain emotion, then he manages to capture that with the way he lights the scene. So the idea of using the blue element as a motif across the film was something that we had sort of initially planned, but how we are going to use blue in individual scenes from a lighting capacity was something that he completely sort of oversaw while lighting and in post. And the thing about Advait that is very, very that is brilliant, and anybody who works in films will immediately recognize, is that his raw images, which are not color corrected, are at par. Is equally beautiful. Mm. It's just the contrast levels and all of those things is the thing that gets sort of fixed in DI. He is very analytical filmmaker that way, very old school that way. So the way he lights the scene and the way he shoots it, there's very little bit of correction work that he does in post.
Right.
He just works with different levels and saturations primarily, but there are very rarely scenes where he'll light it a certain way, and in post it's completely a different color color treatment. So it's very choreographed in his head in terms of how he treats light over how he paints with light over the course of the film. And for me, it's a very enriching process and satisfying process to work with him. This is my second film with him, and hopefully, you know, the first two of many, many films that we do together, because of the way he understands me and understands my scenes. There's a certain rhythm to us, to the way we function. So that is very here. That is something that I look forward to.
Beautiful.
And I'll come back to that the other question that I had asked, because it's towards the end of the film. Like, so many years have passed in this. I mean, the prison ordeal is something up till her wedding, of course, is something that completely changes both of them. And I was wanted to ask you, like, is there like a there's a slow loss of innocence, and there's a lot of cynicism that comes into play, because the film starts off in a very romanticist direction. Like, you have them dreaming about the house and where they're going to live and building a life, and then it ends in this kind of a cynical aspect. Of course, we don't want you to reveal anything about side B, but how do you what exactly you intended for the characters to be in the end of this film? Like, what is their headspace that you wanted them to be?
I've said this a couple of times before, I wanted the end of the relationship is, for me, you know, it's like when I was a kid, I used to watch a lot of Formula One, not because I was interested in the racing. I just liked to watch crashes, you know, because it was so, you know, like, you know, mazedar, you know, to watch like cars toppling over each other. And only later in time, when I sort of came to a certain age, when I was following Ayrton Senna, and when he passed away, it was like I was deeply disturbed by it. And then that's when I sort of examined that, you know, there is beauty in destruction, but the person who is undergoing that beauty, it's a very traumatic thing. So for me, I wanted to sort of juxtapose that experience of watching something extremely painful, but I wanted to make it look nice. You know, that is why the whole treatment of visually juxtaposing his marriage and, you know, his sort of external destruction to her internal destruction sort of just made sense, because
yeah.
I wanted it to look like very picture perfect, like try and make it as aesthetically interesting as possible. But with regard to the cynicism aspect of it, it was, you know, when relationships don't work out, there is always that point where it's like a tear, right? It can end on amicable terms, but the fact that something is not worked out, and especially in a place where something beautiful existed previously, is always a difficult emotion to confront. And
yeah,
that is the space that I wanted to get into, because when you're watching films as an avid film lover, I've always watched films where it says Shubham, and you know, the film ends on a happy note, and you're like, okay, boy and girl met. Okay, what happens next? You know, or for me, that question of what happens next was always there. So for me, side B is exploring it beyond that usual thing where the story usually stops. So, you know, that is what I wanted to go and explore. I wanted to know how to recover from this. What is, you know, what is the process? How do you deal with it? How do you deal with life being like a series of relationships, or, you know, people being a series of chapters in your life? How does that, you know, how does that transcend into a film? How does that transcend into a story? So that is how the thinking of this sort of started, and that's how the film is sort of shaped as well. I don't know if that answered your question. Sorry.
No, that's my question. But yeah, I think for a better answer, of course, I have to wait for the film.
Yeah, true. That is also true.
Yeah. So, you know, quite a few people, Hemant, I'm going back to the bit about people creating their own stories. You know, you have a whole bunch of co-writers now, none of whom will be credited. You know, all of them are writing the film in their heads along with you. Now, you know, have you seen, you know, many of them are putting out that version out also. Have you seen any version of the film that seemed very interesting even to you?
There are a few that I've seen which have made me like go, oh wow, that is something that I didn't think of. But
Okay.
there are lots of them are in that, oh, he'll come out and take revenge and he'll become a gangster and it's a suddenly a mass film. And it is not. I
Okay.
mean, it is a there are elements which the teaser promises. There is payback, there is, but that is not what the film is about. And that for me is very exciting because it's exciting that people have not pegged it to exactly what it is. So, the moment I decided to make this into two parts and I discussed it with Rakshit and how once he came on board, that decision as well, the thing that for me that I knew is that there'll always be this risk of I wouldn't say risk, but there would always be this possibility where people come usually to a theater wanting to like a film, right? That's how 90% of the audience works, so because they are paying money and they are coming out to have a good time with whosoever they're going to watch a film. Nobody's paying money and saying, I want to have a horrible experience. Nobody walks into the theater that way. So that has happened with Side A. Now, if they're coming for Side B, they're coming with a certain expectations, and they're carrying a certain character arc with them. So,
Correct.
to do justice to it is will be interesting. So, I hope I'm very excited as a filmmaker, as a film person, to see how that transpires.
Wonderful, wonderful. Adi?
Shubha, I thought you let you ask the ODT question.
Yeah, okay. So, Hemant, I was hesitating to ask this, but then I thought I'll go ahead and ask. So, some people who normally like romance films and who watched the film on OTT for the first time after a month of seeing superlative feedback, said that, some people have said that, this does not work for me. I was a little underwhelmed. Do you think that the hype for the film and do you think the extreme love that people gave it after the first, say, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, in the first 2, 3 weeks, kind of set even higher expectations for those who watched it on OTT for the first time?
I mean that is bound to happen. It is always like that, right? Like for example, if there's an eatery and everybody says this is the best masala dosa that you'll ever eat, and so many people you walk in and they're like hajar people, the pressure is on you to like the masala dosa, right? The masala dosa will be the same. So it's it, but it is how the rules of the game are. I can't have a I don't take. I don't take particular, a standpoint against that thought process. It's natural when it has happened earlier with me, with Godimanna, with Kavaladari as well, and for all of us, for Rachit also, where the moment the film reaches a certain critical mass and like a lot of people start talking about it, and a lot of people are saying nice things about it. There will be a certain section, a small section of people who will be like, let me see what is so good about it, or let me see, why they're saying that I cried for so long. Maybe I won't cry that much. So you're walking in with a certain framework. So it is natural that they will have a slightly different opinion. So, but I think, all this is very transient in the sense that in the lifetime of the film, it'll after a certain point, the buzz will die down, people will forget about it, and somebody down the road will discover it. Somebody will watch it, and for them it'll be without any of this. So it'll be it that's how I have
It's a
watched.
very fleeting thing.
Yeah, it is a fleeting thing. So I don't take it too seriously, but I think that stings me, and things this the thing that I feel every time I see this, it breaks my heart a little bit. Is and I've seen this a lot is when people say, "I wish I got this in the theater. I wish, I wish I saw this film in the theater." We really worked incredibly hard to try and justify the amount of effort an audience member goes through to come to the theaters and watch the film. And as a team, we are infinitely mindful of that, that effort that they put. So if they like the film, I you know, it should be watched in the theater, because there's so much of, you know, so much of, it's a theatrical experience that we have tried to create. So I
Correct.
hope whosoever has liked Side A makes it a point to come and watch, you know, Side B in the theaters.
Yeah, and on a related note, actually, thinking about it, Shubha, it might be like it creates hype when it comes on OTT, and people who missed it feel differently. But I think actually many filmmakers have commented on this when we talk, when this debate of streaming versus theatrical keeps coming up, that the films that actually do well in streaming are the films that actually released theatrically, because it created something so that now when it's out, people actually want to go and watch it. Like if it just released directly in streaming, people are like, okay, it's on streaming, we can watch it anytime we want, and it gets missed. But it's sort of a, even though it may create a like it, there may be a hype bubble and people may be underwhelmed or whatever, but people actually seek out a film because it did so well in the theaters.
Yeah, and coming back to another thing that Shubham asked is that, you know, it's the if the film still works despite having this section, the small section of the audience, you know, going, I've heard so much about it, let me see what is there in it. And if, even if they watch it and there is still hype to the film, then it means that the film is doing well and is connected to a larger audience. So it is like the acid test. So it's exciting to see that. And it's exciting to see your film do well in that regard.
Right. Now, this equanimity of, you know, I know that you don't talk for the sake of talking. And I know that you mean what you're saying, which is why it always surprises me when you're able to look at a film, at your own film, from a slightly outsider's perspective.
I think I the film stops being by the moment it releases, because it's no longer, you know, people, it's part of everybody now, you know, so it'll always be my film. But the business is like that. The film business is like that. And I'm a producer as well. So I understand, I have the, you know, I have that mental shift where I can look at the film from three vantage points, from a writer, from a director, from a producer, and from a very business perspective. So when I look at it from a very business perspective, I can very easily detach from the romanticism of the cinema, or the, you know, the because it's about money, it's about, you know, it's about how the film works in the market and how much money it needs to earn, and, you know, all that. It becomes easier for me to look at it very analytically.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of out of questions, except what to expect from Side B. Are you having predictions, Shubha? You want your own, you want to tell your own script?
My script was done. The day I watched this film, I couldn't sleep till 1 o'clock. I was tossing and turning, and I said, forget it, I'm writing a new ending for this film right now. Otherwise, this is not working. You know, the last time I felt like this was when I was probably in fourth standard or something, and there was this film with Mohan, the actor, whom those in Kannada are known as Kokila Mohan.
Kokila Mohan, yeah.
There was a film where, you know, he's going to be hung. And I had raging fever, because how can Mohan be hung on screen?
So cute.
Dull ache in your heart that, you know, oh my God, he's going to die in the film. And, you know, this was, I think after a very long time, I felt a certain, you know, your heart felt extremely heavy for a very long time. In Tamil, they call it Manasa Peseyirudhu, you know, which means literally your heart is being
squished in chapati
dough, basically.
Yeah.
So it was like that, you know, something was just churning for a very long time. And even now, during this conversation, I was reading up again and watching some scenes, and that churning has not really stopped, I think. So I'm looking forward to Side B.
I'm glad. I don't take, you know, if for what it's worth, I don't take any pleasure in the fact that the audience is suffering. But it's kind of, it's very beautiful, because I have watched a lot of films where, you know, you learn a lot about life and about yourself through films, and to experience somebody else's story and sort of have the ability to appreciate or, you know, have a certain nuance to the way you look at your own life and look at things that matter, things that are beautiful within your life, is the true power of cinema. And you know, it's if it is haunting people, I hope, I really hope that it is, you know, because they value these things so dearly in their own lives. And you know, it was, it's not made with the intention of, because that is something that when you're writing, it becomes like a, it's a very difficult thing to stay on top of, where you're just making the character suffer for the sake of it, and you don't want to ever do that. And I hope, I hope that is not how the people are perceiving.
No, I just think it is, you know, what if, and you know, what if this had happened?
A lot of romantics.
Agree with me in that 5 years ago, quite a few of us were discussing this when 96 released. What if, you know, that could have been a love story, and you know, that always beats for star-crossed lovers. So
I think I mean, that ultimately is the positive aspect of the film, that it speaks to your soul so closely, so much, and I think it has everything to do with how the film is written, how the characters are written, and how it's so well performed by everyone, especially Rakshit and Rukmini. And I think that goes a long way in conveying this feeling to everyone.
Looking forward to seeing how Chaitra is in Side B, because I loved her in Toby, and I'm really, really looking forward to see what she's done in this film.
Yeah, she's a fabulous actress. She's done a terrific job.
She's a pataka, you know. She's just like
like one of those crackers, like a bijli pataki.
Yeah.
You don't know where it is going to explode, how it's going to explode. So it's a terrific performer. I'm very eager for the people to see her character.
And Rukmini was so Revati for so many of us. So, Adi, super. Closing words to you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty much done with all the questions I have and everything. So yeah, thank you, Hemant, for this film, and also for joining the podcast. Thanks a lot.
Pleasure always. Thank you so much.
Looking forward to Side B. And thank you, Shubha, for joining again. Glad to have you back.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. We'll see you in another episode. And definitely we'll do an episode on Side B once it releases. And we'll try to get Hemant back.
Sure. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Hey, folks. This is Deepak, aka Complicatua, on Twitter. And I wanted to personally thank you for listening to our latest episode. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to The Other Banana on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, or any of the other platforms where you listen to podcasts. Please do leave us a review and a rating, as it helps us drive visibility for our work. You can also view the team's writing or provide us feedback on our content at tobpod.com. We look forward to hearing from our listeners soon. Thank you.